Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Seeking What They Sought. I'm one of your hosts, Anthony Leiter. Welcome to the party. Well, all right. We are really excited for today's episode. In today's episode, Sean and I are alone, and we spend a little bit of time talking about mental health and more specifically, just what it has been like for us to experience some dark times in our lives and some of the things that we've learned from those times, as well as some of the things that sort of prevent us from talking about dark times and mental health in the church. So we're excited to bring this conversation to you, and let's jump right into it. Well, Sean, it's just you and me. It's just you and me this time.
We're recording this only a few days after Jesse became a papa.
True. Jesse has a newborn.
He's a little busy right now.
He is about to experience no sleep for a while. I don't know from experience, but you do.
And it made me so happy to find out. He FaceTimed me the day of, mm-hmm. and Eric was on there as well. And it made me so happy to find out that his daughter was born on my birthday.
Oh, true. That's so crazy, yeah.
Jesse is not happy about that. He's very upset.
Now he's forced to remember your birthday for all
yeah,
eternity.
I told Jesse that she's going to be just like me. And he was really happy about that. So
that's incredible. That's
what's going to happen.
On that day, I remember that morning he messaged, because we have a group chat with us as friends, and he messaged in the group chat. And he targeted you. He was like, Sean, today's the worst of days.
Yep.
But then his daughter was born that day. So that's crazy.
Yep. Speaking of the worst of days.
Indeed.
That's my best segue into our topic.
It's a good segue.
That's my segue, because you said that.
No, it's nice.
So here's the thing. Last time we got together, just me and you, we talked about our experience growing up as pastor's kids in the church. We're going to kind of do a similar thing today. We're not going to get to everything in this topic that we're going to go over, but we're going to talk about our experience. That's the main thing. And just right away, I'll say that if as you're listening to us talk about this, don't think that we're done with it. There's a lot of things we'll maybe
for
at the
sure.
end of the episode, we'll talk about a bit more what
yeah,
some things, some ideas that we have. But so if this is a little bit messy, if there's some things that you wish we talked about, let us know. And we'll definitely follow up in some different ways. So with that being said, Anthony, what are we talking about today?
Yeah, we want to, I don't know if we have a title yet, but I think we just want to talk about just dark times. And I think the reason for that is Sean and I were thinking about how we're just in this strange COVID reality right now. We've just lived through almost a year of this, you know, 2020 was rough for everyone. And it's been a wild time. It's been a time of isolation. It's been a time of lack of community for those of us who are believers. It's been a time where a lot of us haven't been able to go to church. And so it's been sort of a dark time collectively. And so we were kind of thinking about, wow, what if we just talked about what it's like to go through dark times? How are dark times even viewed in the church? Is it okay how they're viewed? And how have we experienced them personally? And we just wanted to have a time of hanging out and talking about that today.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed it as a teacher. I know that my students have struggled with that isolating feeling. And this week, like we're in the last couple of weeks before we go on summer break. And it's one of the most interesting times after COVID, because now that we're in person, over the last week for a 2 week span, we're doing nonstop field trips. There's no school. We ended school.
Wow.
May 21 Friday, like it was done. You're done with the grade book. We're doing the rest of the school year is going to be field trips. And it's been awesome. We've been having a great time. And I can tell like a lot of the kids actually don't want to leave school. Usually by this time, like both teachers and students alike, we're like, we're all done with each other.
Just done.
It's time to go.
Right.
But right now it's this sense of we're together. And it's been really good. And I see a lot of students that were struggling over the year with grades, mental health. They're happy. They're smiling.
Wow.
Yeah, they're doing great. At least a lot better than before. And so I know that this time of COVID, anyone that's listening, you know how much of it's how much of a struggle it's been. Maybe for you personally, but for other church members, for others that you know in your family, friends.
Oh yeah.
So it's and it's been talked about a lot. That anxiety, depression.
The sheer isolation. I remember last March. I think last March I didn't leave. Like when isolation first hit, when it like you know it kind of be. COVID kind of blew up. And I remember I go to Andrews University here in Michigan. And I remember when we went to all remote classes, everything online. I don't think I left my house for like 2 weeks. I remember stepping outside the first time after that. And I was like, wow, I have not seen the sun in like a solid 2 weeks.
Yeah. My end was chaos. And it was as a teacher flipping over to a distance format, just crash course. Like you have to, there's no, like, there's no professional development. Like you're just doing it. You have to. And the same thing for the students, they have to learn distance. Now you just have to do it because that's how it is. And on top of that, everything closed down, including daycare centers. So Rochelle and I are teaching at home in our Southern California, small 2-bedroom apartment with Olin at home. So we're both teaching simultaneously with this little 1-year-old screaming around the house.
Oh, my word.
You know, trying to have our headphones in and figuring it all out. So I wouldn't call it despair, but it was a high stress time of extreme adjustment and high stress, just trying to figure out how do we do this?
Right.
You know, we're both working parents with a little kid that just wants to play. It didn't last forever, but yeah, it was, there were so many adjustments during this last year, especially at the start. So it's been a difficult time. Anxiety, stress, and depression have definitely been on the rise.
100%. And I can imagine for everyone listening, everyone sort of relates in a different way, you know, whatever this past year has looked like for you. Yeah, I feel like we've all collectively experienced kind of just a dark time in general. So I guess that kind of brings us to transition. How do you feel like, Sean, dark times in general? And when I say dark time, why don't we pause first and define that? Like, I feel like when we say dark times, we're sort of talking about moments of struggles with mental health, depression, anxiety, maybe times of doubting. The old term is the dark night of the soul.
Yeah.
That's a term Sean and I have talked about. So when we talk about moments like that, whether that be grief because you've lost someone or something or trauma in your life or something, sometimes there's not even a reason. We've been talking about that too before we started recording, Sean. Sometimes there's not even a reason. Sometimes you're just in a funk or you're just in a gray, you know, moment. How when you think about us growing up in church, Sean, how do you feel like dark times were sort of viewed and talked about?
I think it definitely varied from person to person or church to church, but I definitely think that it could be a struggle to relate to the church. I think especially getting into high school, that's where I struggle with depression first.
What do you mean by that? A struggle to relate?
A struggle to relate in that I didn't find many people to connect with. When I started going through struggles with depression, doubt, dark times, and when I say dark times, for me it was depression and apathy, like real apathy. Like I did pretty well in elementary, K to 8 overall, except for math. Math was always a struggle. Like after grade six was like the watershed. Like now I'm one of those kids labeled as I struggle with math. And that lasted for until now, which grade is why I married a math major. So now I don't struggle with math anymore. But I definitely struggle with grades like freshman and sophomore year. A lot of my depression, my mental health was linked to just like, I was not trying hard in school. GPA was super low, you know, slacking off, having those parent-teacher conferences and, you know, just super unmotivated, struggling with kind of just apathy, more apathy at that point, I would say, than depression. But depression was a component of it, especially looking back now.
Yeah.
But I didn't feel like I could relate to anyone. It was usually just like, this is happening because you're not trying hard enough. That was the first step. You're too lazy. You're focusing on what, gaming or just not doing your work, and you're not disciplined enough.
You're saying that it was the reality, or that's kind of the message that you got?
I wouldn't say it was like it was explicitly told that way, but that's how I felt. That was the culture. Like if you're
right,
if if this was happening, it's because of these things.
Like you were to blame. It was your fault, essentially.
Yeah. My parents never said like, you're not, like, it was never like I got a scolding. Like, they obviously want me to do better with my grades, but there was never that sense, at least, you know, in that way. I would say the real struggle for me was when things started getting better, which is weird to say. Hmm. And so when I, just to try to summarize it really quickly, by junior, senior year, I did notice that my connection with Jesus was a lot stronger. I started connecting with friends like you, Jesse, and others, that we started doing Bible study. Mm-hmm. We started going on mission trips, and we became very active spiritually in different programs at the school, in the chaplain's office, at different events throughout the year. And in a lot of ways, it created this spiritual high. I think one of the highest spiritual mountains of my life was the second half of high school.
Wow.
Yeah. Really big spiritual high. And the weird part is, by senior year, where I was leading out, like I was even asked to speak at during the mission trip to Fiji, like senior year, like doing that, seeing people get baptized and doing all these things that were, you know, I spoke at the student week of prayer, doing all these different leadership things. And my grades were doing way better. I was way more motivated. I lost 50 pounds. Like you would say, like if you looked at the list of things that I accomplished between sophomore and junior and senior year, like those span of 2 to 3 years, you'd say, oh, that's a success story. You really improved your life academically, spiritually, socially. Yeah. All these areas are good. But I would say, transitioning now, the darkest night of the soul that I've ever had was my senior year of high school.
Wow. Yeah.
When my grades were at their best, when I had, I guess you could say, the most friends. Mm-hmm. I was way more socially active senior year than any other year. Spiritually very active. But that was also when I deeply struggled with depression, and I just felt completely alone in it.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'm really thankful for a few friends, though, that when I say completely alone, like there were some that I disclosed, you know, those struggles with. And there were definitely just deep emotional imbalances in my life. I didn't know how to handle it back then. And there's different reasons for it, but I struggle with that. Like, how come, like, the way that I grew up, I felt like, man, if these things are going well in my life, especially my connection with God, then I should be happy.
Right. Yeah. Right. Like all the things are going well, therefore it should.
And, you know, like Jesus is in my life, so I should be happy. Right. Mm-hmm. And we get to, we talked about this before. There's this Sabbath school cradle roll song. I'm in right, upright, outright.
Wait, what is it?
I can't say it. Why is it so hard to say? I'm in right, outright, upright, downright, happy all the time.
Right. It's a wild song.
When Jesus came in, you know,
Jesus Christ came in and took away my sin, right?
I'm in right, outright, upright. So look at, but when we look at that song, theologically, do we agree with it? Because look at the pathway. You're happy because Jesus came into your heart and took away sin. So step one, Jesus comes in. Step two, removes your sin. And therefore, step three, you will be happy all the time.
Yeah, that's
what does that message say? What does that message say, you know, really? And do we agree with it? I would say I disagree with it. And even though you wouldn't say, like, during your most depressed moments or dark moments, you don't think of that song like, what's happening?
Right.
I remember the song. But
yeah, true.
But more specifically, though, I think I felt that way, that I'm doing all these good things, so I should be happy.
Right. Yeah.
I shouldn't be struggling with depression and these emotional imbalances in my life. And it got to a real low, like, you know, a couple months before graduation, I remember like January to March, maybe even like April, to a low point where I literally disclosed with a friend. Like I was in I would call it despair. Like I was really in despair.
Yeah.
Just everything looked gray. Mm. It really had a physical impact beyond just the emotion. Like everything was worse. You know, food, talking to people, everything just wasn't hopeful or good or exciting, whatever it might be. And I remember disclosing with a friend, like, you know, I don't know if I want to keep living. I never got to the point in my own life of I would say contemplating suicide, but that's about as close as I could get was disclosing, like, I don't think I want to keep living. And I'm really thankful for that friend who contacted a pastor and connected me, and I was able to get some counseling and just disrupting me. Like I was in that flow of despair and didn't know what to do with it. And that friend, you know, I disclosed that with them, but they used that in a way that was helpful for me. Yeah. And I really appreciate they use that discretion, that discernment to know, like, I need someone outside of myself to help. And I need help. And taking my text, I think I sent them and saying, like, yeah, there needs to be, beyond them just saying, hey, I'm praying for you. Like, hey, God's got this and is going to help you get through this. Like,
yeah,
there was a step beyond that saying there needs to be some disruption in Sean's life to help him through this.
Wow.
And I really appreciate that discernment from that friend, really mature as a high schooler to think of that. I really appreciate that. So, and that helped me a lot. It didn't fix all of it, but it was a step towards recovery for me.
Mm. As an aside, I'm only realizing this now as you're talking that, and I guess we don't have to say his name, but that friend, he's a friend of Sean and me, and he's a social worker now. So that's funny how, that's just interesting how even back then he was already like that.
Wow.
So what I mainly took away from that, and I don't want to cut you off if you weren't done, by the way.
No. I talked long enough. I tried to do it quickly, but that was a long segment. So the main, taking away from it is.
Yeah. How do you,
The takeaway was I didn't know what to do with that struggle and learning to accept that, that just because things are going well does not mean you always feel like everything's good, even and especially spiritually. Like you think, oh, you're connected with God, therefore I'm going to be good in my life. Like everything's going to go well.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And that was not the case. Some of the darkest times were when things were on the surface going really well for me.
Mm. Yeah, something I feel like I've learned and I say often nowadays is I feel like so much of the Christian life is lived in the dissonance between what the scriptures say and what we experience and feel. I feel like so much of the Christian journey is just lived in the middle, like the dissonance between like, okay, the text says this, but I'm experiencing this. What do I do? And I feel like that's where God works so often, but yeah, that's such a relatable thing, Sean. And it's so wild that we've been friends all through that time. And I remember, cause I was in a similar mode back then in high school, not the same, but a similar mode. And I remember us staying back and studying math together and having lots of talks. And it's so funny that even during that time, like I don't even think I grasped the level of what you were experiencing during that time, even though we would talk about it. And that's just so, I feel like how powerful that is that we, on the outside, it can appear as if things are going so well, but really internally, you know, such a struggle. Wow. So I feel like, well, I guess the question is like, it almost seems like within church, we look at moments like that you experience and we kind of equate those as like, oh, this is bad. This is negative. Like God didn't want you to experience that. What do you think about that?
It's really tough to go into that because a lot of times that's true. Like if you see someone dealing with a struggle and to the point of the friend that helped me, like they saw something and they knew like, yeah, I don't want to just leave them here. I'm really thankful in my instance, in my circumstance, there was a relationship I had and that's the key here is relationship.
Right. Yep.
And so in that circumstance, there was a friendship where they could discern and see over the course of time, because this was not the first time that this friend had received a text from me or had a conversation with me or seen the emotional roller coaster I was on that year.
Right. He was there the whole time.
So it wasn't just like an isolated, like, oh, this is the first time I've seen this from this person. I have no established relationship with him. Here's what I'm going to do. Here's the fix. Or I'm praying for you. Like I said earlier, I'm just praying for you, whatever it may be. So there, it is circumstantial in many ways. So that's why it can feel difficult to talk about. But there is something to be said about a lot of times where dark times or struggles that we're going through are not just inherently bad or sinful.
Wow. Yeah.
So first step is it's not your fault. It's not, or at least I should say, it's not always your fault.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I wasn't doing destructive things with my life that led to that depression, that deep despair.
Right, yeah.
So that's the first thing, is it's not just always your fault. Sometimes it can be, but it's not always. That's the first thing to understand. Step two is going through that experience, whether it be your fault or not, is not always a bad thing. It's not always a bad thing.
Yeah.
And there are times when it may be that God is allowing you to go through it, whether it makes sense or not. God may allow you to go through that. And I think that we as a society, not just, we'll get to the Adventist part, but I'd say let's start on the broad scale that that depression, dark times, dealing with traumatic things in our lives, we usually say that those are bad things that we want to get away from.
Right, yeah.
And we all have ways of getting away from them.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's numbing the pain,
coping avoiding mechanisms,
the like suppressing, like not addressing the issue, like hide it away deep inside, don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's different ways we deal with it. We talk, I think you've called it escapism, Anthony.
Yeah.
And there's many ways that we can all agree, okay, these are bad ways. We shouldn't go and get drunk on alcohol as a way to escape our problems. Okay, we pretty much all of society and humanity agrees that's not the best way to handle
for sure
our emotional issues.
Yeah.
So, but that's the obvious thing. But let's narrow it and get to maybe a more difficult way of looking at it, which is this.
Uh-huh.
Even like if you scope it down, like shrink it down to Christianity, and you say we're going through bad times.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times we then go into the healing or the beneficial aspects of a relationship with Christ, which is not a bad thing. But a lot of times we
what
simplify
do you mean by
to
that?
the idea that, oh, if you let Jesus into your life, he will heal you of these.
Right.
Like you're going through this issue when you have a relationship with Jesus, just like the song, right?
Yeah, it's
when
the
Jesus
song.
Comes
yeah.
in me, he'll remove sin. Mm-hmm. And by the way, your bad time, the depression, the dark time you're going through, that is sin.
That's sin. Yeah, it's equated
with
sin.
That's the statement. Whether you caused it or it was indirect, just know that that was part of this sinful world.
Yeah.
And that's almost a half truth.
Right.
Because yes, we're in a sinful world, so these things happen. Right?
Yeah.
But the half truth part of it is if we just say that this moment in time or this season is purely just sin, that means I need to get out of it.
Right. It's not valuable.
That's
at
the
all.
Conclusion. I need to get out. That's mm-hmm. the only thing I know is I need to be away from this.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is then it does lead to the escapism concept. And in a way, Christianity can fall into the trap of escapism even.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say even 100%. More so in Adventism. So let me explain what I mean. Mm-hmm. Within Adventism, we have an emphasis on the second coming. Mm-hmm. We agree that's a good thing. We want to be hopeful. We know that God has a plan.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of beauty and value in that. That's part of our DNA as Adventists. My question is, a lot of times do we maybe take that narrative of the second coming and create a form of escapism in it? So that when we're living in these moments of grief or okay. struggle or trauma or depression, we look forward and say, you know what? Someday, Jesus is going to come again.
He's going to wipe away every
tear from your eye.
Yeah.
Every depressive tear from your eye.
So therefore, do not feel sad or depressed now.
So yeah, either that or it's just like wait until he comes. Like there's kind of a mixed message. Like either, just grit your teeth until the second coming or when you die and the next blink of an eye, you'll be there and whatever it might be. And mm-hmm. again, the danger, the struggle is this, and I'm even struggling. I'm not fully resolved in this too, because I'm not saying we completely get rid of that. There is a point in sharing the hope of the second coming.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But I wonder, I'm speculating here that can be its own form of escapism and it can be unhealthy or irrelevant to many people in the moment dealing with these struggles. Mm-hmm. And wondering, how do we live within this? How do we deal with it now? And is it helpful? Because if it's just purely bad, a lot of times it's not just resolved immediately.
Yeah.
And so the longer that goes on, the longer you question, like, man, is Jesus going to give me victory over this?
Yeah.
And if I don't experience some level of victory, does that take away my relationship with Jesus? Does that call into question if I'm close enough to Jesus? There's a lot of ways that can go down and create a negative spiral.
Yeah, exactly. This actually brings to mind a conversation I had with a friend just a couple nights ago, and he was kind of sharing with me, I'm still struggling with this thing in my life. And essentially he was just kind of crying out and just feeling like super frustrated at himself and angry and depressed, because he's like, I believe in the gospel. I believe that I'm saved. I believe that God has freed me from sin and darkness, but I'm still struggling with this. So is it even true? Like, and he essentially was sort of like struggling with exactly what you're saying, just living in that dissonance of really the message of that song. It feels like we're attacking this song, but it's really the message behind that song, right? If God is in my life, then I won't experience bad things is really almost the myth or idea that I feel like has been perpetuated for so long. Like, yeah. Jesus comes into my life and therefore bad things don't happen to me. Like, I'm,
yeah,
my whole life is great and beautiful and wonderful.
Yeah. And it's a half truth though, because, and the truth is powerful because Jesus does bring victory. Like,
for
Jesus
sure.
can
yeah.
take, like, not just theoretical principles,
yeah.
but he can, like, there's building blocks, practical things like God gives us that will improve our health, our holistic well-being, right?
Mm-hmm.
Including mental health. So it's not like we should just say, ignore those things. There's no hope. You just have right. to live with it and deal with it. No, there are things we can do that can bring victory.
That I feel like that's one extreme. That's sort of one extreme of that is sort of like seeing, oh yeah, okay, so we don't experience full victory. So maybe like God doesn't really do anything and we're just sort of on our own. I feel like that's sort of one reaction to that, you know. But I love what you're saying about it being a half truth, where it's like, yeah, like the risen Christ comes into our life and we do experience victory, and that's powerful and real. But then also there's the other side too. Kind of what you're saying, like,
yeah, it's hard because it's like if you don't experience enough victory over anything in your life, which this is a bigger topic, but if you're not praying hard enough, right, the whole Roger Morneau power of prayer concept,
yeah,
that really makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah,
and so anyways, there's a whole other conversation there, but it goes back just even focused to our conversation here of, you know, what if I don't experience that deliverance right now?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I'm praying so hard. I'm going through this. And
that's the core question. Is something wrong with me? I feel like.
Is there something wrong with me or even the situation?
Hmm.
Right. Usually it's something's wrong with me.
Yeah. I think it's important.
But what I'm sharing for us to think about with our listeners is, does that mean the situation's always bad?
Right. Yeah.
Maybe it's not. Like, we would agree, like, we don't want to be there,
mm-hmm.
but is it okay to be there as a Christian, as a follower of Christ? Like, can you still have a healthy relationship with Jesus and be going through that dark time?
Yeah, exactly.
And not seeing this either immediate resolution, or even sometimes you don't always see progression. It just kind of stays the same at times.
Mm.
And there's mm-hmm. that's a challenging one to think about, but... This is something that, you know, it's not just the song. It's, you know, we're attacking that one song, but there is that narrative even with the way that some people interpret Ellen White,
mm-hmm.
The way that they look at the way she talks about things like doubt and dark times, where you would never say that she instantly says, like, if you have any degree of that, you're a bad person or a sinful person. But
right.
sometimes it's concluded that, you know, there is this hope in Jesus and the hope of the second coming, so that we don't have to, you know, if
kind of like dwell
and
on.
It's and it's kind of looking at the, you know, one example of a text that's used a lot and Ellen White used it is 2 Corinthians 4:8-18.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like, you know, what Paul says here is, we are hard pressed on every side, but not crushed, perplexed, but not in despair. We fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen,
mm-hmm.
since what is seen is temporary, but what is seen unseen eternal. Is eternal. And a lot of times we take this beautiful passage and maybe we say, like, therefore fix our eyes on eternity, which, you know, again, for Adventism, our DNA is eternal life, the second coming.
Right.
Again, a good focus.
Yeah.
But we sometimes take that part, the which is temporary, this temporary thing, we say, okay, well, what you're going through in your life right now, this bad thing, it's temporary. There's light right. at the end of the tunnel.
Exactly.
And, you know, we can always fix our eyes on Jesus. He's going to bring us to that better peace, whenever it may be, right now or in eternity. And I again, there's a good message there. But many times when I've heard that, I still feel unresolved.
Yeah, yeah.
In that message.
Yeah.
And I think even, you know, to back up Ellen White, like, there's a lot of, you know, I'm looking at an article right now that reflects on her struggles with depression. You mm-hmm. know, she lost, was it one child or two children? I don't remember.
But I'm forgetting. I know.
For sure one.
One of their sons, yeah.
But she talks about times of gloom and darkness and, mm-hmm. and struggling and, you know, over periods of time. And she always relates it back to God's love in spite of his apparent absence and going through that, which is good. And mm-hmm. I think that when we look at her as a whole, there is a really good message there. And she's not just simply saying, like, if you doubt or struggle with depression or,
mm-hmm.
or gloom, as she describes it, that you're a bad yeah. person.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
that's really significant. And I feel like maybe for us to transition to talking about kind of like how even someone like Ellen White, who we hold as someone in our church, as someone who has a prophetic gift, who is a leader, who spoke, who led, even someone like her, she struggled with depression. She struggled mm-hmm. with times of darkness and gloom. But before we talk about that, I wanted to just hit on what you had kind of synthesized everything that you were saying, because it kind of what I was hearing was sort of like, it's so easy, I think, for us to use religion, our religion, even believing that it's true, but sometimes I think we can use it as sort of like a mask or as sort of like a, we use it as, like you're saying, as a escapism. And I feel like because we're such an intellectual church, which we've talked about before on the podcast, I feel like the tendency is to sort of like go to that intellectual space when someone is struggling, you know, in a moment of darkness, is to like, okay, well, let's just go to the text. What does the text say? Well, the text says, you know, God will supply all my needs according to his riches. And the text says, you know, like, asking you shall receive, or that verse you mentioned in 2 Corinthians. And so therefore, like, we don't need to feel sad. We don't need to feel down. And it's almost like this attempt to like, kind of like push away the negative dark thing and not sit in it and just sort of rush on to like, well, everything's fine. But I feel like what you're saying is that whole assumption that going through dark times is something to be avoided or inherently negative isn't really even true. It's in reality. Yeah. In reality, that's not even real. Like, dark times, at least for now in our current existence, is kind of like part of life and part of.
Yeah. And a lot of times, you know, in the Adventist church, we call them the mission spotlight, or the,
oh yeah,
you know, like a testimony hour, whatever it might be, where you hear these. A lot of times when you hear of someone that like went through a traumatic experience, like losing a child mm-hmm. or whatever it might be, most of the stories end with the hope mm-hmm. or the resolution, like, oh, okay, true. But when I really put my trust in Jesus, I read this Bible passage, I spent time in prayer, and I had this moment where this, and we use this also, the peace that passes all understanding.
Yeah, or King James, the peace right? that passeth.
Passeth.
Yeah. passeth all understanding,
and,
yeah.
And again, a lot of beauty in that concept, right? Like, even beyond any works that I can do, God and the Holy Spirit, the comforter,
yeah.
the counselor, there is so much value in that. Here's the problem, though. It's not those stories on their own, but a lot of times we only tell those stories of victory, clear victory, like, man, the woman that lost her son to this murderer, like, was able to forgive him. And wow, what an incredible story, like that,
yep.
that Christ-like character. And that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But what if I'm just holding on to that anger or that despair of like losing
for my
child? And I'm just depression. Like, I know it's the right thing to forgive and to feel hope in Jesus, knowing that I'm going to see my child again.
Yeah.
Or, and it's not always that story, but it could just be another story of just depression and, oh, you know, I was suicidal and God brought me from the brink and I've got victory now and I'm good now. Everything's fine now.
Yeah.
And I'm happy. Those are a lot of times the stories we share, and we get the hearty amen. And if you're a progressive enough church, you clap.
True.
But that's not always the story for everyone.
Well, exactly. And I feel like I don't know, just from pastoring enough people and living a few years of life, like, I feel like that's the minority of people that experience that. I feel like the majority of people like don't experience a really clear moment of like positivity, victory. Like, I think a lot of people do, but I feel like it's way more gradual than oftentimes those stories portray. And I feel like, and again, not demonizing those stories, because as we said, like, God does do those things. God does come in and have, you know, like, miraculously, you know, change someone's outlook or do a miracle. But I feel like more often than not, those stories make people who aren't experiencing that like, wow, well, is something wrong with me then? Because like, it's been 4 years and I'm still struggling to get out of bed. I'm still struggling with, you know, mental health.
And Anthony, I shared part of my story here. Like, for you, would you say that listening to those stories, and you've talked about it a little bit just now, but In your own story, would you say, like, if you were to wrap up your testimony or whatever with dark times, with depression, whatever it may be, would you find that you related it all to like experiencing, like, you're reading classic, like, you're reading the Bible, you're reading, you're doing a prayer or a time with God, and boom, he delivered you from your depression. Like, did you ever experience that in your own life?
That's really interesting. I feel like I never really experienced that in the form of mental health. And darkness and things like that. I think I experienced that in different other miraculous ways, like God would show up in crazy ways financially for me, or he would do some sort of miracle like that. But I think often in moments of darkness or doubt or mental health or grief, I feel like it was almost always like a long, gradual, slow process of of recovery or not even recovery, sometimes just like a metamorphosis into a new thing.
a new perspective on the issue.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, you know, like my wife and I just got divorced. And so the past couple of years have been real tough. And I feel like even that, I feel like has been such a, there was no, like, I woke up one day, oh, everything's fine. Like, God is in my heart. Like, even though I feel like
I'm happy now.
Yeah. I'm happy now. I feel like, even though there has been such like a deepening, and I feel like I have grown closer to God throughout the journey, but I feel like it's, there was just never a miraculous moment. And I'm grateful that it's been kind of a slow burn, like a slow growth, you know, like a slow healing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, to answer that question, I feel like more often than not, it hasn't been one of those moments.
Right.
And most people I talk to, I think is similar. I think it's, the slow game.
Yeah. And it's really hard because you do have, and we're both in, and have been in positions of leadership. We've been in that area. And that can even be a deeper struggle sometimes for those that are in leadership, because sometimes there is that sense of responsibility, that burden for putting on a certain persona. We talked about that with Matt Gamble.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's been almost a few years ago now, talking about his struggle with being a public figure in the Adventist church and then having in the inside, like, things he was struggling with, not experiencing victory, whatever it might be. And that really was a cycle of, you know, a real struggle, not having that sense of community where he felt like someone reached out to him. That really haunted me at the end of our talk with him, is he said when he kind of had his falling out with the church, no one reached out to him.
Right. Yeah. It's just really sad.
Like the community part.
Absolutely no one from his church.
And so, and it's kind of that weird, like, here's my question I'd pose to all of our listeners. If you found out at your church, like, your pastor or a leader was struggling deeply with depression, would that make you feel uncomfortable? Like, what are the conversations you would have if you heard that?
Exactly. Would you, is that pastor unqualified or not trustworthy? And actually, I did a little research and I found this study. It was, 2014? So a few years ago, about 5 or 6 years ago now. But it said 49% of pastors report they rarely or never speak about mental health in sermons or large groups. And 23% of pastors struggle consistently with mental illness. So it's definitely a real thing. And I feel as like, I remember the day vividly when I realized my marriage was falling apart. And I remember going out to the car in my driveway and sitting in my car and just like crying and just feeling like, wow, like, and I, you know me, Sean, like I feel like I tend to be pretty vulnerable, open book, you know, down to talk about stuff. We've known each other a long time. I don't know there's any secret in my life that you don't know about.
The dark dorm days where we know too much about each other.
We know too much about each other. But even then, like, you know, because we were friends during that time. This was only a few years ago. This was 3-4 years ago. And I felt like, and I have a really strong friend group. But even then, I still felt like, I don't know who to tell this to. Yeah. Like, as a leader, there's just such a weird pressure of being, like, in a role of spiritual leadership.
I've got to be in my bubble.
Yeah, like, I'm expected to, like, withhold this image and this thing and, like, who do I tell that I'm just in a place where I'm not? It's such an isolating feeling, you know, it's wild.
And for some, it does lead to a spiral or there are always headlines, you know, we've seen them happen where pastors, whether they be well-known or not, that have either left the ministry, left the faith, or even worse, like they struggled enough with depression and those thoughts that they took their own life. And unfortunately, a lot of times those are the headlines you see, right? Like, it's not about always mental health awareness. It's like, oh, how could a pastor do that? Right.
Exactly.
I mean, we're so shocked.
It almost perpetuates it. You know, like we jotted down Jared Wilson, the megachurch pastor who died a couple of years ago, 2019, died by, he took his own life.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was sort of the headline. I was just like, what? Like, megachurch, like, how could a pastor? And it's like, wow, you know, leaders struggle in the same way. And I feel like that's really important. I feel like maybe we probably still have some work to do. I think that question you asked is really important. Like, what would you do if you found out your pastor struggled with mental health, you know?
Yeah. And even if it wasn't just like they weren't qualified, but would you feel comfortable enough to reach out? You know, mm-hmm. It's almost like we put the pedestal, like, to have that pastor congregation.
He's supposed to reach out to me, or she's supposed to reach out to me.
Yeah. Like, that's their job.
Right.
And so, you know, it would almost be weird. And maybe there's something to it. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it fully, because I can see the certain level of, like, there's a professional relationship. I hate saying that too. I feel gross saying there should be a professional relationship between pastor and congregation, but
there's sort of an element
at
of
least
that.
On a certain level. I don't know how we talk about that, but it's almost like that would be really weird to go up, unless you were like a really close head elder, mm-hmm. or another pastor of the church or administration, like conference leader, like a ministerial director. Mm-hmm. Those things like make sense, I guess, in the cultural system we have built mm-hmm. in. But just a person at the church going and not only saying like, I'm praying, but hey, like, I'm here for you. Like, let's go out to coffee. Let's do this. You know, yeah. trying to connect with a pastor, it sounds unusual.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds it just sounds unusual. And I don't like that. I don't like that can't be, or at least it doesn't appear to be a support system for that always.
Yeah, same. It definitely, I remember one statistic, and I've realized we're talking about pastors and Christian leaders, so it's not applicable to everyone, but I just as a final point on this, I feel like, I remember in undergrad, we read some statistic that like 79% of pastors reported they don't have any friends.
Yeah, just lonely.
Like, that's so significant. That's so important. I feel like it's, like, even for someone like me, who, like, I'm in a leadership role, and I have friends. I have such good friends like you guys, and I still felt so isolated. I still felt like, who do I talk to about this? I feel like for someone to not feel at all like they have anyone to talk to is just so, I feel like we have a lot of work to do that there with in church of, befriending our leaders.
And unfortunately, a lot of times with mental illness, it's a taboo topic.
Yeah.
And it's something like, you know, it's still like, it's getting better.
Yeah.
We're both in and outside the church. There's progress, but it's still, it's just so hard to discuss. It really is. I don't care who you are, but if someone has a broken leg, you're not uncomfortable or awkward. Like, oh, why'd you tell me that?
Yeah.
Like, no, you're like, I'm going to help you.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter if my pastor breaks their leg, I'm going to help them. It doesn't matter their position or status. But you get into mental health and it becomes a different thing.
Exactly. It's almost like, oh, like, wow, well, maybe you're not equipped to be the leader then. It's almost
like why were you can't preach about this then?
Yeah, like how you could
can't
you
preach how can you preach about hope?
How can you
preach about this mm-hmm. topic or whatever it might be? Because you're living a double standard.
Exactly. Which is so ironic, because I think in our friendships and the way we live normal real life, I feel like when someone has gone through something, you appreciate their perspective more, right? I feel like you appreciate someone's perspective more who like went to rehab and it's like, wow, this was crazy. Or, you know, or they experienced drug addiction, or they're, you know, just anyone who's experienced something really crazy and difficult.
Yeah. That's the funny thing though, Anthony, as you say that, because a lot of times we admire, and as a church, we have historically admired people that came back. You know, we talked to Doug Batchelor, right?
Yeah.
And the life he lived before coming to Jesus.
Oh, right.
But the key is that was in his past.
Yeah.
Right.
Before I met Jesus life.
Right. Yeah. So, and I'm not attacking him. I'm just saying that's his story, right?
Yeah.
And he's of course accepted, admired, and as a spiritual figure. So, but that was the past.
Yeah.
Whereas if he was going through that right now, I'd be like, or any element of that right now, be like, wait a second, you know.
Are you okay? Like, maybe you shouldn't.
Yeah, like, this isn't right. That you need to take a break. You need to take a sabbatical and get away from mm-hmm. Whatever it might be. And so, like, that's the case today where, you know, if this was in your past, it's okay. Like, that's okay. You can still be qualified to be a leader. But you can't go through any of those elements now.
Right, exactly.
Like, your testimony was in your past. Your relationship from now until the rest of your life is needs it's to perfect. Be your testimony is from your past only.
Yeah, exactly. Your testimony is not ongoing. It's not
because if your testimony is ongoing, that means there's still broken things inside you right now.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't like that as a person looking at my pastor. I don't want to see that, or a leader in the church. I don't want to see that. Yeah. So that's an interesting. Anyways, we could talk more about that, but it's there's a lot of interesting.
This made me think about. I feel like connected to. We've sort of talked about how there's sort of this Adventist kind of perfectionism that is sort of in our veins and in our blood that goes back to the William Miller days. And I feel like it's sort of that. Like I feel like culturally, as Adventists, we want to. And I feel like it comes from such a good place. Like we want so desperate, we want for the gospel to be true and we want for the Bible to be true. Like we believe in truth and truth is such a strong value for us that we're like, this is true. So if this is true, then like Jesus changes our lives and that's real. And that's such a good value. But then I think because of that, we feel this pressure to portray this image that like our testimony isn't ongoing. Like you're saying, like everything is solved. So if you've been baptized, everything is solved. Like it's all in the past. So then there's this like weird kind of stigma with like, you know, anyone who's in any sort of level of spiritual authority being able to just say like, I'm struggling. I think that that's,
Yeah. So, and this is at different degrees. Like let's expand this now again to everyone else, whether you're a leader or not, because there's this sense of if I'm in Christ, if I'm a follower of him, then there's a certain amount of like resolution. Like there's.
Yeah. Like victory. Yeah.
There's victory and resolution in my life.
And health,
where things are good, where things are good. Like I can go through bad things in my life, but I've got this anchor, in a sense, like this foundation that can't be shaken in any way, and there's this resolution. Like once you've come to Jesus, you've been baptized. Like that resolution is done.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, in Scripture, that's not always true.
Yeah.
There's that's like the... people that believed in God had a relationship with God. There are stories, not always, there's many, of course, with resolution.
Yeah.
But there are examples of there being places where there was no resolution, at least for a time.
Yeah.
Like there's just no resolution. They had to live in the dark moment.
Yep.
God allowed them to live in the dark moment. And I'm actually referencing this from
very true.
Psalm 88, which actually comes from, for me at least, I found it and discovered this concept from Timothy Keller. Mm-hmm. I think we've probably mentioned Timothy Keller at least once, twice on this podcast. Presbyterian minister, really
great author.
I think for both of us has spoken to us in many ways profoundly through reading and listening to his sermons and talks and thoughts. But he talks about in his sermon How to Deal with Dark Times, this focus on Psalm 88. Mm-hmm. And Psalm 88 is about this guy named He-Man. The author is He-Man. And so he got his power from Grayskull, right?
That's such an old
definitely
reference.
Got a reference.
I never even watched He-Man. Did you watch He-Man?
I never watched He-Man as a kid. And I've been through this weird phase in life where I go back and retroactively look at old shows that were popular things and just like look at them. And I remember I like a couple months ago watched an episode of He-Man.
How was it?
And it was fine, I guess. Like the classic, by the power of Grayskull. The way we reference it most often is because there's this viral video on YouTube. I can't even say it because it's like literally, heya, heya, heya. Like it's long nonsense word. And it's just this viral nonsense video with He-Man in it. I don't know if you remember what I'm referencing right now.
I do.
It's
this garbage. We watched it.
We'll put it in the show notes because it's really important for us to put.
It's crucial.
Won't make Eric put that in the show notes, but.
Well, now he's gonna because.
No, I know, but I think of the name He-Man. But I don't know if that's how you pronounce it or not. But it's H-E-M-A-N. That's the author of Psalm 88. And what's interesting about Psalm 88 is it goes and as many psalms are, it's a lot of emotion. Mm-hmm. And which is really powerful. It's good to go through the Psalms and just see the emotion.
Yeah.
But most of them end with resolution. You see the valleys and the ups and downs, and usually they resolve.
Yeah, David's like, therefore I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
Yeah. And the point of Timothy Keller's sermon is he actually isolates, and especially Psalm 88, but also Psalm 36. Psalm 39. So Psalm 88 and Psalm 39 are the two Psalms that don't resolve with hope or like this happy ending.
They're lament. They're psalms of lament.
Yeah, and they just end at the lament.
It's wild. Yeah.
Like there's no response from God, like, take heart, my child. Like, here's your answer.
Mm-hmm.
Or response. Like, it ends in lament or hopelessness.
They just sit there.
And so, what do we do with that? What do we do with that as Christians, as followers of God? Because these are not pagans.
Right.
These are people that know God. And so going through that, there's a lot of value that can be found in that. So some of his points that he goes through that some conclusions when you look at Psalm 88 is that you can be in darkness for a while. Like it's not just always going to get resolved immediately.
Yeah.
It's not always going to get figured out. And you can see throughout the tone, the wording of this Psalm, it's just a lot of darkness in this man's life. Man's life. Like he is going through darkness. He's going through hopelessness. The way he's talking to God, he's got a lot of negative emotions going on in his life. And you wouldn't just instruct people to like talk this way to God. Like you wouldn't just say, do this. You know, it wouldn't be like a model for like a good way to deal with things. But what's beautiful about it is it's still included in the Bible.
Oh, well, I'm interested like why you would say that. You're saying it's not the full picture of, it's not a holistic view of what prayer should be like?
I would at least say it's not the classic way that we would instruct like how we deal with our situation.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Negative
definitely
talk.
Not. Yeah,
like,
that's
we
definitely
shouldn't
not.
Just negative talk isn't necessarily helpful. But what's beautiful about the scripture is it's not sugarcoating like, oh, here's what he should have said to deal ideally with the situation. This is the raw, unfiltered conversation with a human with God.
Yeah.
Whether it's the ideal way he should have handled it or not, no. Like this is just what he said.
Yeah.
There's no filtering, you know, and he even demands. He gets to a point where he's like, answer me, God. Why aren't you saying anything?
Yeah.
And he even accuses God. Darkness is a better friend than you are, God.
Sheesh. That's a wild, that's a wild accusation. That's a wild
one. So what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that he shouldn't say those things. I'm saying, like, we wouldn't take the conclusion and say, like, oh, this if I isolate this, it's saying darkness is a better friend than God.
Oh yeah.
Like you can't like do this isolating literal whatever you want to do, right? I'm not going to tell my kids, my sixth graders, to memorize
darkness is a better
parts
friend
of
than
Psalm
you.
88. This darkness is a better friend than God.
Okay, kids. So for our memory verse today,
like that's not the banner I'm going to hang above my classroom next year.
That's so fun.
So that's my only point. I think it's beautiful because it is unfiltered. It's unfiltered raw emotion between a man and God.
Sorry, Sean. That was legitimately hilarious. That was really.
And as you keep moving on through the story, like you kind of assume like, oh yeah, eventually God's going to respond. Similar to the story of Job, right? Because Job goes through that. He goes through that emotion. And God at the end is like, who are you to judge me? Like, let me show you the universe and the complexity
where were you
the situation.
And I created the atmosphere. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's beauty to that story as well. There's a lot of hope and good things from that. But
for sure,
we're going a step further with this. Psalm 88 goes even further than Job, which is no resolution.
Yeah. He just leaves.
At least in this story, there's no resolution in Psalm 88 on its own.
He lets the lament sit.
He's
and the
left
text lets
in the
it
darkness.
Sit. Yeah.
And this circles us back around to the question of, is darkness a bad thing?
Right, exactly.
Is it inherently, is going through a dark time inherently a bad thing? Because you would say that if it was, why would God not respond immediately to resolve this? Because the thing is, this man, you wouldn't say like in the background, oh, well, he's going through this and God's not answering him because he's not a follower of God or because he did some, there's no example or evidence from this man, this author's life that he was sinful or did something to produce that.
Yeah.
That darkness in his life. We don't have evidence of that. He's reaching out to God, and God, at least in this story, he doesn't say anything.
Yeah.
He doesn't answer the accusations, like, how dare you? He doesn't try to encourage him, like, hey, listen, I know you've been going through this. I'm gonna bring you out of it. We don't get that.
Yeah.
So it can initially be, like, kind of shocking to say, like, why would this be the case? And But there is hope to be found in this story. And I think it's really powerful. And Tim makes a great point here that sometimes becoming great and being shaped in the character that God wants for us, he allows those dark moments.
Yeah.
And even without resolution immediately.
Yeah.
Like he's allowing us to shape our character and go through that process of of despair and anger and emotion. And he's trying to weave that together into something valuable, something worth holding on to.
Well, that,
instead of just escaping it, he doesn't just need us to immediately escape a bad situation in our life, a dark situation in our life.
Yeah, it reminds me of, and maybe as we start wrapping up here, it reminds me of, I remember taking a class on death and dying and grief in undergrad, and one of the things the professor really helped us understand is, like, sometimes we try, and for those of us who are coming alongside someone who's struggling with darkness of any kind, sometimes we try and rush them towards being out of the darkness because we're uncomfortable. It's not like... it's not them that we're trying to really help. It's really ourselves. We feel an anxiety. We don't know what to do. We're trying to rush them on. When in reality, even in the text, like you're saying, like some, even in the Bible, we have these Psalms of Lament where it's not rushed on to a conclusion. It's not rushed to a resolution. It just sits there. It's just allowed to sit, which is, and I mean, you think of all the stories in the Bible where people went through really hard things and there were, like, there's just moments of darkness where God doesn't answer right away, or he doesn't show up right away, or there's not, you know, like, so I think that's just so crucial. Sean, I feel like maybe in conclusion, maybe I think it's important for us to share, like, what have you learned from dark times in your life? Like, if you were, if you were to synthesize, and you and I are both talkers, so maybe if we synthesize into a kind of a shorter, what have dark times taught you in your life?
Well, it's been helpful for me to learn how to trust God even in those moments, and not to assume that it just means something's wrong with my life because of that moment. And that even relates to physical, like for many people in biblical times, they assumed that if you were physically incapacitated, it was because of a sin in your life.
Right. Yeah.
And Jesus goes and heals those people and shows like that. No, that's not what happened there.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what it was, what it simply was. And in my life, like you, I didn't have immediate, you know, moments, but there were things that helped me. There were things that were valuable, when it came to using practical steps that are helpful. And these aren't immediate solutions, but living a healthier life and you know, physically getting exercise, doing things that disrupt me from the apathy or the funk that we get in. Those are helpful things. And community is really important. So connecting, we've connected a lot, Anthony. We've talked to others that have struggled with depression and mental health. That's been really helpful for me. But it didn't happen overnight. But there was improvement. There was in many ways resolution, and I have experienced in my own life a lot of victory over depression.
Wow.
Also over anxiety. We don't have time to talk about it right now, but even when I first started my job right out of, you know, college, graduating, moving states, getting married, starting a new job, I dealt with a lot of anxiety my first year teaching. Really, really deep anxiety.
Yeah.
And over time God was able to work with me there too, but it didn't happen right away. There were a lot of dark times in that first year of teaching for me as well. And so what that's helped me with is I've been able to share that story, not because I was able in any sermon or talk able to say like, oh, and once I started praying this certain prayer or enough times a day or doing this certain thing, God was able to bring victory immediately in my life.
Yeah.
It was more like, you know what? God has taught me so much just living in it.
Wow.
Being in this, I've learned so much more than when I was happy.
That's wild.
I'm so much closer to God because of this dark time. And I think there's a lot of things I've accomplished or God has done through me because I've gone through those times. And if I didn't, I would have less of a ministry or less of an impact if I didn't go through those things.
Yeah.
And it's not just because it was resolved later, but because I've lived in it.
Yeah.
And so sometimes even going through those still help me relate to someone that is going through it. There's a deeper empathy if you're also going through at least a level. Not just that you went through it in the past, but you're still sometimes struggling with those things. And there's a deep empathy connection that's there. So maybe God is giving you or allowing that darkness. So there's someone in your life that you can connect to right now on such a deep and relatable level.
Yeah.
So there's so many ways you can look at it. Yeah. But that's in my life. Yes, I have experienced victory. I have seen God work in so many ways to bring me to a better place. But I don't look back on those areas and say, man, I never want to go through that again. I mean, selfishly I do, but there's so many of my spiritual moments where I've grown most with God and deepened in my relationship are the dark moments.
Yeah, I definitely resonate with that. I think of, like I remember, what was it, Sean, the summer before our junior or senior year at Walla Walla? I remember, I'm forgetting which summer it was.
I think it was 2013.
I think I was 22, I think. I remember that summer, I remember experiencing a huge shift in my faith and relationship with God where I all of a sudden it seemed like he disappeared from my life and I just felt as if he was missing and I just had a huge crisis of faith. And, you know, going through that experience, I remember at the end of that summer coming back to school and we talked cause we were roommates and we were like, and, I think we were in a meeting even. And I, our chaplain, Patty McCoy at the time, he asked us, you know, how was your summer? And then both of us said the same thing. Like, I think I'm an atheist. and I was just like, what? Like we realized, wow, we experienced the same thing. And then we had a lot of talks about that. But I remember experiencing that and really kind of having a similar thing where having come through it now, like in the moment, just going through it, like it was kind of wild because I was like, wow, it's everything I've ever believed in my whole life, just a lie. Like it's all just, it's just fake. But then like doing a ton of intellectual work as well as like rereading the scriptures and a lot of other things that I could talk about another time. I remember kind of going through it and then sort of realizing like, oh wow, like God was trying to transition me into a whole new type of relationship with him than I even had before, where like my old relationship was dependent on emotions and feelings. And then now, wow, it's shifting more into like surrender and trust and faith. So I remember, I definitely have seen that. And then in a similar, but also different way, like in these more recent years, experiencing divorce and sort of the grief and transition out of being married and that whole thing, it's been a wild time. Lots of texts that I would send Sean and Jesse at like 3 a.m. for a while. But I remember experiencing that and going through it and having many moments of like reading scripture is meaningless. It means nothing. Singing worship songs are meaningless. They mean nothing. Like I still believe God is real, but I just, his, like all of the cliche religious encouraging things seemed meaningless to me. And then, but then throughout that, God found new ways to speak to me. Like he'd speak to me through nature in a really big way. And that had never happened to me in my life. That was sort of a new thing that's happened in recent years. So all this to say, I think that I've seen a similar thing. Like it seems like we want so hard to avoid dark times, but then in the moment when we're in them, I feel like there comes like a strange depth and beauty that happens from experiencing them. Cause like you said, all of a sudden, I truly think like grief and trauma and darkness, like as you're traveling through them and journeying through them, it, you know, if once you make it make it through, I feel like there's such a new depth of heart and soul within you and the ability, like you said, to empathize with others and to come alongside someone else who's experiencing that maybe a little bit behind you and be able to say like, hey man, like, I know it seems today like you won't make it to tomorrow, but I've been in a similar place to you and I felt the exact same way and I made it through and so can you. And to be able to encourage, I feel like that's so much stronger. Your ability to encourage others is so much more potent through that. So, and I could talk a lot about this. I think, and this is just my own personal take. I think the way I've experienced God is that as I follow Jesus longer in my life, I think I've found that his ability to trust me with more of his silence has increased. Whereas before, I think I wouldn't have been able to handle his silence, or I wouldn't have been able to handle him not answering certain prayers. You know, like for a long time, I prayed like, God, can you save my marriage? And God didn't answer that. And I, for a while, I was angry at him for that. But I think I don't know, like going through the whole thing now, I sort of see like, wow, like, as I'm kind of more mature now in my walk with Jesus, he can like trust me with like just saying straight up no to my face. which I think is a wild thing where like all of a sudden, I think as you mature in your walk with Christ, like God's able to say no to you all of a sudden. You're like, hey, God, can you do this? Can you like do this miracle or do this thing? God's like, no, I'm just not, because you need this. Like you need this. You need to experience this thing. You need to walk through. I'm going to be with you through the whole thing, but you need to. And that, so that's been, I think, kind of my experience in going through moments of darkness. I feel, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I feel like we're both, yeah. No, you go.
God's given you tools. He's given you tools through the darkness that you wouldn't have received otherwise.
Exactly. That's a good,
And for me, I don't think I mentioned it, but like through the depression in high school, it's like the first time, although I never had like clear, like instant, you know, testimony style, like victory. There were moments where there was just this clarity of, I would be reading scripture desperately. I just had nowhere else I could turn. I was trying to figure out how to deal with the depression. So I'm just sitting there with God, like, I don't know what to do. I'm so depressed. I can't get out of my bed right now. I can't talk to anyone. I just can't. And I would,
that Anthony guy, I hate that guy. He can't. No, I'm kidding.
But you talked about this too. Like there is that sense of isolation. Like, you just,
Even don't know
what to do. You don't know how to reach out sometimes. And it takes practice to reach out. It's really uncomfortable. True. Even with close friends, it's really hard to reach out.
Yeah.
But even in that depression, it's the first time that scripture really became meaningful.
Wow.
And like you said, like sometimes it can't relate. But for me, even though it didn't fix everything right away, it's the first time, like I remember it was reading through Philippians, like specifically going through Philippians 4. And everyone remembers Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me. But we forget what Paul writes leading up to that in verses 6-7, you know, going through like, I can be content in any circumstance.
Yeah.
And he's not saying that you're happy, but he was talking about like all the negative things he went through, like, you know, going through all these dark times and being content, which is so much different than happy all the time. And that brought me so much. It was literally soothing. Like I remember that wave of calm and like that wave of like, oh, there is something better. Like there is something God still has for me. And it's not always going to be like this. And I can go through this with God. And there was a sense of peace that did wave over me going. And I would just keep repetitively going back to that, reading it over and over just in my bed when I felt like I couldn't do anything else. And that developed and trained in me something that didn't happen before in my life in any Bible class or sermon or church service, which was an appreciation for what scripture can do, how it can have a healing aspect. So that wouldn't have happened without the dark time.
Yeah.
And so it was necessary to develop that sense of appreciation for scripture. And so like you, there's other things that God has developed that sense of appreciation for your relationship with him in different ways too. So, yeah, there's Anthony, we can keep going on.
The
biggest thing.
Yeah.
And just to really quick say, like, I didn't want to leave it, even though it's not resolved in Psalm 88, it actually does with this guy, He-Man, the author. He does later on in scripture show evidence that he was able to go and do incredible things. He was a leader. He was, it doesn't say that everything was taken. It never says that his despair was taken away
or
all questions were answered, but it does show that he was able to go on with life.
Right,
and he was able to affect many people and do good things for God as a leader.
Yeah.
It talks about him in 1 Chronicles 6 and talking about some things that he was able to do. And so God was still there. God was working. The pain was temporary. He was able to work through it. You know, there were things that God still was able to resolve in his life, even though we don't see it immediately. So there's still that hope. There's that sense of hope.
I feel like in closing, I think sort of just going back to this all makes me think of another psalm, you know, like sorrow lasts for the night, but joy comes in the morning. I feel like experiencing what you and I have experienced, I feel like I still believe in that truth. I think we've just learned like the night can be way longer than it seems. And the morning can be like a journey and not just a day. All of a sudden you wake up and you're fine.
Up and down.
Yeah. There can be such a long night and there can be a long day and there can be other moments of night and there can be other moments of day. And I think God is still good throughout the whole thing, but.
Yeah. It doesn't always mean something's wrong. Like I'm not doing it right.
Yeah. Like
everyone's experience is different. God allows those things for different reasons. And
yeah.
Learning to live without always full resolution, just that finding that peace in God, even in those moments.
That's good.
So, yeah, I would say as we conclude and look at this, you know, the practical things are finding people you can talk to, like step out and talk. And, yeah. And I know that's so difficult.
That's crucial.
But, if you don't have that community, number one, you can send us messages. You've heard our stories. If you feel comfortable, if you feel led, you need someone to talk to. We've had so many powerful messages. I never thought, like in our little rinky-dink podcast, that people would reach out. But we've had so many encouraging messages just for us, but also just questions, conversations. And we encourage that if there's something that just a conversation you need to have, we'd love to reach out to you, have that conversation with you. And so that's definitely an option if you don't have that church community, whatever it may be. But also on top of that, we would advocate for you to be that start in that church community.
Yeah.
Are you going to, if that culture is not there, are you going to encourage that and try to advocate for mm-hmm. there to be that level of, it's okay. It's okay to be in this dark night in this moment and still be a believer, and we can still get together through that. And you don't have to just try to fix it for someone. Even if you're trying to, you know, your best intentions are there, it's not just about fixing the problem.
Yeah.
It's being there.
Yeah.
On that journey with that person.
Yeah.
And if you can relate, wonderful. If you can't, you can still be there.
Yeah.
And support.
Yeah. I think you can never overestimate the power of just being there with someone, just the ministry of presence, just being alongside someone, or just sending a text to someone being like, hey, how are you doing today? Or how's it going? Like, how has your week been? Mm-hmm. You know, we learned a lot. I know I learned a lot from our interview with Caleb from Humans of Adventism, with him, mm-hmm. him kind of giving us some questions to ask, like, how has this last year of COVID been for you?
Yeah.
You know, how are you? How is your heart? Like, I feel like you can never overestimate those questions. And it starts.
So many, so many people need care. Like, people are just yearning for someone to care or ask that question or just go through that. And it's uncomfortable. But yeah, you're right. Caleb was inspiring with those conversations. But so many people are feeling isolated, and so what's the worst that can happen if we step out? You know, what's the worst that can happen?
And I think the same is true for anyone who is struggling right now, who's listening to this. I think we would be remiss if we did not address that and talk to you as well. Like, if you're struggling with mental health, reach out to someone. Let someone know. Don't suffer in silence. Whether that's us, send us a message. You know, we can't solve everything, all the problems, but at least to be able to tell someone if you're struggling with mental health, if you're struggling with depression, thinking about suicide, reach out to someone. Let someone know. Let your pastor know. Let your parents know. Let your friends know. Don't live in darkness and silence, because I think Sean and I have both experienced kind of the isolation of that, and also the beauty it is to just confess that and get off your chest, or how Sean shared in his story how someone was able to connect him to help. And I've had moments in my life where people have connected me to help. So if you're in that place, please don't suffer alone. Let someone know.
Yeah, don't live in denial. That's the big thing. Don't live in denial that it's happening. There's something healthy about embracing that it's happening.
Yeah.
And knowing that there are others that can relate or that can just be there.
Also,
and if it's not always an immediate fix, but just embracing that it's happening.
Yeah. And also, you're not the only one, and it feels like you are, but there are many of us who are in the same fight as you.
And we're all afraid to say something.
Yeah. We're all afraid to say it, but there's so many of us, even those of us who are up front, those of us who are on stage, whatever, at church, or, you know, teachers, leaders, whatever, like, many of us fight the same fight as you every day. And it seems like maybe we don't, but we do. So nobody's really alone.
Anthony, this has been a good discussion.
Yeah.
It's always hard to know how to end this when, like, the whole topic we're looking at is lack of resolution. We're trying to resolve it.
Yeah. But, I think there's really,
the biggest thing is it's a journey, and, we're hopeful this has been a helpful discussion for those listening.
Yeah.
And don't let it end here. Continue the discussion with people around you.
Blessings be upon you all. Well, all right. Thank you guys so much once again for listening to this episode of Seeking What They Sought. We really appreciate it, as this is a topic that's really dear to the heart of Sean and I personally, for sure. And we just want to say we definitely recognize that this conversation was not representative of the whole spectrum of the conversation on mental health within the church. And we've actually been talking about for season four, having a mental health professional on for an interview to be able to talk a little bit more, go a little more in depth, and to talk about some resources in a better way. So never fear. If you have any other ideas connected to this topic, we'd love to hear them, or just thoughts, feelings, or even personal stories. We'd love to hear those as well. Well, all right. Once again, just want to thank you guys for listening. I want to pause and thank our two-time Ukrainian peanut butter eating award champion to Eric. I just fumbled that award. It's been a while since I've done one of these outros, though, so you gotta forgive me. We thank Eric. We appreciate you for making us sound pretty. We will talk to you next time on Seeking What They Sought.